John Tourwright. This is Telephone Talk with Shirley. The early in December 74, the first time I'd heard from her all summer. Channel Tourwright and the Telephone Talk with Shirley, the first time I'd heard from her all summer.
I didn't know whether you came over here much or not.
No, that was the first time we had gone over. See, I'd been in bed for 3 weeks with heart trouble, and haven't been able to go anywhere or do anything, and I couldn't fix too much, so I just fixed a turkey and a cake, and we went over and enjoyed the rest of the meal over there.
Well, there's nothing wrong with your voice.
No, I feel good today. For the past 3 weeks, though, I thought I would die. I've been going to Dr. Allman, and he's got me on some special medicine. And I've gone from one ailment to another until I think now I might live.
Oh, really?
But we had a time there for a while. I found that he found out what my trouble was the first time I went to him.
Oh, don't tell me.
And I'd been to all these doctors, and not a one of them had found the trouble. So he put me on some medication right away, and I feel better today than I felt in 15 years.
Well, I'll be darned.
So I think now that we're on the road to the in the right direction, and I might get to feeling better. But gee whiz, since I've last seen you, I have been so sick that I just lay down and wish I'd never get up again.
You mean you really felt miserable?
Oh, I was really. Well, he told me if I hadn't came in when I did, he wouldn't have given me 6 weeks to live. That's how bad I was.
Hmm.
My color was real dark, you know.
Circulation?
Yeah, and my arms and legs was real heavy and no circulation. My hands would go to sleep at night, you know, and I'd have to get up and shake them and rub them and everything else. They'd get real cold, and the color would be real, real dark in my arms and legs. And he found out that the trouble was that the heart was enlarged.
Yeah.
And that I had a lot of fluid in the heart.
Oh.
So, and he's been working with me, and I'm telling you, he has really, in less than a month's time, I've lost almost 50 pounds, and I feel great.
I'll declare.
I just feel great.
Well, now, you had that fluid business before, but it never affected your heart, did it?
Well, it was affecting my heart, but not as severely as it had up here until recently. And they thought it was congestion in my heart. I mean, in my chest.
Yeah.
But they didn't relate it to my heart. The fluid was just building and building, and it caused the heart to expand and enlarge the heart area altogether. And the fluid kept building and building until it was causing poor circulation and poor flow, you see.
Yeah.
Fluid through the veins. The blood couldn't stimulate the way it should.
Yeah.
And it was just coagulating in places, and I was getting in bed. Bad trouble.
Yeah, and it didn't get any better.
So, no, and the more I try to do, you see, would take my breath away. I was getting very short of breath.
Yeah.
And I was getting weaker and weaker all the time, and still pushing myself, and I was wearing myself out.
Yeah.
So finally, I just gave up, and there was six weeks there. I went to bed, and I didn't care whether I made the children a meal or not. There were mornings I didn't even see them off to school.
Jeepers,
so
okay.
I really went through a time of it. But now I got so depressed, you see.
Yeah.
and everything else, because I kept going from one doctor to, I spent a good fortune on myself trying to find out what the trouble was.
Yes.
Went through all kinds of tests, and they couldn't, and the sugar, they kept saying it was my sugar, you know. And my sugar, according to this doctor now, is down to normal because I've been eating the proper foods.
Oh, really?
So I don't have any trouble really with my sugar, but it's high blood pressure caused from the heart not acting right, and the fluid that's been around my heart.
Yeah.
That I have to watch right now.
Yeah.
So I'm taking all kinds of medical pills here. Then I'm going through the change too, because I'll be 40 in January, and all that plus this other is really had me down.
Well, I just pictured you over there just having a picnic over Saturday night.
No, I tell you, I had a good time today because it felt good, you know. And first time I've been out of the house, and goodness knows I don't know how long.
Well, that's hard to believe.
So
it's hard to believe. Faye ran into Berman in the grocery.
Yeah.
And she said there wasn't anything wrong with him.
With Berman?
Yeah.
Well, since she saw him, he had an attack and almost choked to death one night. And went to the doctor, a bunch of x-rays. He had 20-some x-rays made last week. And come to find out, it's a tube that leads to his stomach from his esophagus that's over-enlarged. And when he eats and then lays down, all the food wants to go back up into his esophagus. And that, in return, goes to his throat, and it wants to choke him. So they thought at first that it was ulcers or gallbladder trouble or something like this. But that's what the trouble was. And now he's got to elevate his bed about 8 inches, you know, so that he's almost in a sitting position when he sleeps.
Well, I'll look that.
And then he has to lose about 40 to 50 pounds.
Yeah.
The pressure from his stomach is pushing up on his chest, causing the food to back up into the esophagus through this large tube. It's over enlarged is what the trouble is.
Yeah.
So he's got to lose some weight.
Well, so, I'm afraid to ask about anybody else.
Well, everybody's fine. Everybody's fine. Now that we know what our problems are, we're doing better.
Yeah.
I've lost 50 pounds. He's gained 40, and he's got to lose about 40 or 50 pounds.
Yeah.
I've got another 40 or 50 to lose.
Well, they leave slower than they come back, don't they?
Well, you mean the pounds?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Except for today, I was doing pretty good. I'd lost almost 50 pounds in a little over 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So I was doing pretty good, but then today I think I put on a good 10 pounds.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, Shirley, I haven't, I've been over here working at the desk, and I'm out of commission most of the time. I feel sorry for myself. And I don't see anybody, and I don't know anything's going on. I haven't seen your neighbor over there all summer.
Well, I tried calling a few times. The line's been busy, but I want you to know that her brother passed away. Did you know that?
Oh, the mechanic?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, and she's been very, very blue and depressed about that. And, she has really, you know, the best I've found, though, is just to leave her alone and let her get over it by herself, because the more you talk about it, the more it upsets her.
Oh, I see.
So I kind of, you know, try to comfort her as much as I can by calling and asking how she is and things like this. But
yeah.
And I stopped to see her a few times, but she has really been very, very depressed about that, because he was the last one in her family besides herself.
Yeah, and he was about the most normal one, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a pretty nice fella.
Pretty nice fella.
Very, very, you know, he's jokeable. You can sit down and really enjoy a conversation with him.
Well,
very jolly.
What happened to him, Shirley?
They don't really know. They think it was a heart attack. But he had a very bad bruise on his head. It might have been foul play from what she tells me. It sounds like it, but she doesn't really want to believe that.
Yeah.
She says that the coronary report shows that it was a heart attack, but he could have had a heart attack after all this happened to him.
Yeah.
So we don't know, really.
I'll be damned,
what it was. We've had a lot of sorrow over here. She lost her brother, and just before that happened, I had just been to a funeral with Johnny, a boy that was in his senior class with Johnny, would graduate in June, went hunting the first day of hunting.
Was he the one?
Uh-huh. And he was shot in the head.
Yeah.
And so Johnny wanted to go to the funeral, and I took him over there, and he was the chaplain also in the FFA with Johnny. They have gone to school ever since kindergarten together.
Well, I swear.
And so he was pretty upset about it, and I took him to the funeral, and that was the saddest funeral I have ever been to in my life. Mostly because I guess I knew the family all real well.
Yeah.
And then I came home, and I hadn't been home 20 minutes when Mrs. Guthrie called and told me about her brother. And then I think she was a little peeved at me because I didn't go to the funeral, but I was still pretty much upset. It really got me, you know, in the way, and I wasn't feeling good anyway.
Yeah.
And it really caused me to have chest pains. I couldn't sleep at night and everything for thinking about the family of this boy. And then I just couldn't attend another funeral on top of that. I was just all in.
Oh, you can just have so much.
Then Berman come home Monday morning and Monday night and told me that his best friend there at the university shot his head off. That's Lamar Smith down there. I don't know whether you know him or not, at the university.
That Lamar Smith was?
He worked there at the university. Did you know him?
Yes.
He shot his head off, committed suicide.
What in the world?
And we don't know. Remember, they fired him here 2 years ago, and he took it to court and won the. He just won the procedure through the court, won the case here about a week ago, and he was to report back to work Monday morning, and he shot himself Sunday night. So we don't know. They say he was very depressed. But don't know the reason why he did all this.
Good Lord, good Lord. Shirley, I declare, you...
And then you've heard about the murder over in Hawthorne of the colored family that the colored mother and her son that was killed and the two boys that was hospitalized.
Yes,
And this was a 18-year-old colored boy that did the murdering.
Yeah.
We knew all of them.
Oh, you did?
That's what
makes it so miserable, when you know them.
We knew her real well. She worked at the cafeteria at the school, and she was, her children was in the Weeblos, and Berman was the leader of the Weeblos, so we had him in the class, and the younger boy was in Tommy's Cub Scouts, so we knew the children real well, and Tommy was all upset about that, you know, because of his little friend.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been one nightmare after another, it seems like.
Yeah.
It just seems like we just don't know what's going to happen from one day to the next.
Well, I'll tell you, first time I see you, I've got a report like that, too.
Oh.
And it was also had a ridiculous side. And I wrote it down. I set it down, everything I could remember about it. And then I went back and talked to the people again and got it a little straighter and set it down. And I want to read that to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just like these things you've been telling me, except it's also ridiculous.
Yeah.
And
Was this somebody you know?
Yes, John Palmer. They survived and everything. John Palmer and Mr. Eastman. Mr. Eastman's a fella that sort of helps me keep the place going up here.
Mm-hmm.
So I've known him almost ever since I've been lived down here.
Mm-hmm.
And the oil is ridiculous. It was ridiculous. I wrote down 3 or 4 pages.
Uh-huh.
I'll read it to you sometime.
Okay. I'd like to hear it.
I'll read it because it's ridiculous.
Okay. Well, I tell you, there's so much happening, we just don't know. We're just thankful to, this is one Thanksgiving day. I told Faye this morning I had you on my mind all day, because remember, last Thanksgiving you was here for dinner with us.
Yes.
And I kept thinking about that all week. I thought, well, gee, if I could just get up and get things going so that I can have a decent meal, I'll have you all come over. But I just seemed like to me that each time I'd try to do something,
Well, let me tell you, Shirley, I'll tell you what'd be the nicest thing. We just eat some of them pancakes some morning.
Okay. Oh, goodness.
You know, I haven't had the pancakes. It tasted like pancakes in so long, I don't know what. Last time, there's a place down there on University Avenue. What do they call that?
The Waffle House?
Waffle House.
Uh-huh.
And the last time I went down there, the Waffle House had changed hands, and they lost the cook.
Well, I'll fix you some pancakes. You come on over.
All right. That'll be quite an occasion.
Okay.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, it's been some time since I've seen you. I told Faye this morning, I said, goodness, last time I talked with you, you know, you was in a big hurry, so I thought, well, I didn't know, but you might have been mad with me for something or what. But I told her, I said, well, maybe he was just in a big hurry.
No, I wasn't. I don't remember being in a big hurry.
But well, it seemed like we just had a few minutes there to talk, and I didn't. Yeah, I could tell you was either in a hurry or disturbed or something, and I didn't want.
Well, I get that way. I get so I sort of feel sorry for myself.
Oh, don't we all though?
Yes. I don't enjoy that. Do you?
No, not anymore. I don't. Not when I have a good day like I had today.
I don't enjoy worrying.
Oh, I know it.
And seemed like, I don't know, there's no reason for it. No, it don't do any good.
No.
But every now and then I catch myself just worrying something awful about something that I can't do a thing about.
Oh, well, the state the world is in right now is depressing.
Yeah.
And if you listen to the news broadcasts every day from one day to the next, I get to the place where I don't even want to turn on the radio.
Yes, and all this job business, that's fierce. You know, people got to have jobs before anything else. But another thing, the chief thing that gets on me, I've been trying to do some paperwork over here, and I thought I had finished that. I done enough of that in my time. And here I've got in behind some of it again, and I just don't enjoy it anymore. I used to like it,
mm-hmm.
but I get tired of it. I'd like to pass it on to the other fella. You know how that goes.
Yeah. Well, I know. I'm keeping up with just what records I have to keep up with. Berman's records here that he has. You know, we had to keep records here on the place, and his records there. What he does at work, and then records on the cattle, and records for Johnny and the FFA, and I tell you, it's typing this, typing that all day long.
Oh yes.
And if I get behind, I'm behind right now with the Christmas orders and things like this. See,
I thought about that.
Yeah, I do my Christmas shopping before Thanksgiving, and this year I'm just not even in the mood to do it.
Well, let me tell you, last year you got all those bicycles and things.
Yeah, this year they're not going to get much.
let me tell you, you spent it all for the medical profession.
That's right.
Well, let me tell you, at least they still have you.
Well, there we.
Let me tell you about that cow. This summer, that cow didn't have a calf, of course, and she got fat. She looks like she's right in her prime.
Oh, you mean the old cow?
That old cow. She's fine.
Oh, that's good.
And you know that little run of a of a steer that I kept?
Yeah.
It wasn't good enough to take to market. Why that fella started growing, and he's almost as big as Pappy.
Oh my gracious!
And just perfectly beautiful.
Well.
And he's quick in his movements, just like the bull.
Ah.
He took right after him.
Well, you know, I don't know what in the world's happening to the cattle prices, but I haven't been able to sell but one calf this year.
Yeah.
And that's all one little heifer is all I've sold. And, well, now we've had a few little runts that I had out of a few cows, you know, young heifers that we had.
Yeah.
And we took them to market, and one of them brought $23.55.
Yeah.
And so we figured, well, we'll keep the rest of them here rather than to take them to market.
Yeah.
So we've got them out here in the pen, and we were going to feed them, but by the time we put feed into these things, we would be broke.
Yeah.
So I don't know what we're going to do. I got about 26 young weaning animals that should be fed, and we just can't afford to feed that much.
Yeah.
Now that's the end of that telephone talk with Shirley. I think it's Thanksgiving Day, the 28th November 74. On Thanksgiving Day, the 28th November 74, after she had seen Faye at the Christmas dinner at the park in Evanston. This is the end of that talk with Shirley on the telephone. After that, on Christmas Day, Thanksgiving Day, the 28th of November 74.
Take good ones up with 5 times I'll buy everyone.
Do you have a set price for a certain size? Something like
not
that?
Really, not yet. I haven't got into it enough to have a price list or anything. I just tell them what strikes my mind at the time.
Yeah.
I know what it costs me, and I always make it more, but, you know, always round it off, you know, maybe even $5 or $10.
Yeah.
Something I haven't really gotten into a nice set thing, you know, or like that's another thing that other professionals say, you can't do that, you can't make business that way, you know, you can't run a business that way, you got to have fixed things and go stick by them and all that, but I'm not much businessman like that. I like to.
Well, you've turned out real well, Nick.
I made most of my money selling pictures to the anthropology department. Of the pictures I took in Europe.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they paid me $100 for 20 slides of pictures I'd taken in caves in France in the anthropology thing over there.
Uh-huh.
And that's the largest I made in one chunk. Mostly I've been 20, 25, 10, 30, 50 occasionally. And I've made enough to pay for all the camera equipment so far.
So you haven't had to go into debt. Everybody we
every
know.
Time I get the first camera I ever got was given to me by Father Lindsay, you know, the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He gave me a camera. He had a Leica. They're the best in the world.
Father Lindsay.
Yeah, he gave me that camera, and I took a few with it. And
they're telling him to come back by next.
Boy, have I met some characters you'd be interested in.
Boy, have I met some characters you'd be interested in. Some just
characters like you wouldn't believe.
Looks like Molly.
It is.
Well, how did you get that picture of Molly? Little book on your head?
No, I took that the last time I was down here.
Oh, did you?
Mm-hmm.
All right, that fills up one wall.
Yeah, that's what I want it for, my whole wall. Where's Barbara?
You're on. I don't know where she is. You talking about those characters?
Mm. You wouldn't believe them. Particularly this one fella. He's a horseshoer. Farrier. Oh boy. Name's Tex. He's not from Texas. He is some. He's older fella. Always drunk and always unshaven and rumpled up and bloodshot eyes and comes wheezing out to shoe your horse and you think he's just going to murder the horse. But boy, he can shoe a horse in 5 minutes. I mean all the way around, 1 foot to the other, right around. By the time he makes it to the last shoe, he's got his shirt off because he's sweating so much. But, yeah, he's really something. He says he wouldn't give you a nickel for all those farrier school certificates these young whippersnappers carry around to do horseshoeing with. He wouldn't give you a nickel for them. He says you've got to get in there and do it. You can't learn it by going to school. He's really something.
Well, Nick, I've lifted a horse's foot, and it pulls muscles that you're not accustomed to using. Now, how that mixes with the whiskey culture, I don't know.
I don't know how he does it. He gambles all his money away. Always plumb broke. But when it comes to doing a shoe, no matter what condition he's in, he can do it just perfect. He can clip them so clean. You know, you pick up the foot and you clip them with the nippers first. Then you smooth it all out with the rasp. You know, get it all the edges smooth before you put the shoe on. He clips them so good that he doesn't have to use the rasp. They're so perfectly smooth from the clippers. Never seen anything like it. I was so amazed. I never seen a farrier so good. And he could be just wheezing, or just about to fall over from being such a hangover. But yeah, he does it. On his, if you're in a hurry, he'll do it just as fast as you want, and still won't jeopardize the quality at all. But normally, it takes 3 hours to do one. If you got plenty of time, if you're not hurrying him up. So I just sit back on the fence and watch him and listen. He talks your ear off from one end to the other. He'll no more pick up the horse's foot than he's got a story. He'll hang there holding the horse's foot till he finishes the story about some character down the road that he's. It's he's just really. I wish I had a tape recorder around. The language he uses, wow. Just straight out of, I don't know, Faulkner. It's really just amazing. Just amazing. What a character. I don't even know his last name. Tex. It's all everybody calls him.
Yeah,
Tex.
Yeah. It's all hard to know the last name.
I know. He comes out in a beat up old truck. He doesn't have any fancy forges and anvils and things like that. He has an old beat up anvil and a couple of hammers and, you know, just the basic stuff, nothing fancy. Troll truck with no hubcaps and hood held down with a piece of rope and, you know, and just ambles on up, and he's already got the horse picked out before he gets there. I mean, he'll drive down through the field and the old horse will be out and around. He'll say, that's the one over there you need to shoe on, right? It's the one. I don't know how he knows, can tell the horse needs a shoe somewhere from just standing there. But he already knows which one it is before you even go catch it. He knows. Amazing. Just amazing. He shot Ajax. He came, in fact, that was the first time Ajax ever had shoes, was he did it. First time.
That was the first time I ever met him that day.
Well, that's been a while then. You've known him some little time.
He has a little gizmo that I've never seen fairies ever use before. It's handy. I don't know why anybody else didn't ever think of it. I don't know whether he invented it or not, but I've never seen anybody else. It's a stand to put the horse's foot on so he doesn't have to hold it.
Yeah.
You ever seen one?
Yes.
It's got a base plate about this yay big round. It's got a rod sticking right up out the middle.
Yeah.
He just puts the horse right on top of the...
I don't know why they don't use that. That's one of my earliest recollections.
And
they use that in the blacksmith shop.
I don't know why. Nobody ever... He must be one of the old kind that remembers or something. I've never seen any farriers do it nowadays.
They just straddle the hoof.
Right. And hold it up. My back gets so hard hurting from leaning over like that.
Oh, yeah.
He just puts it up and plunks it on there, and he files around the edge and does what he has to do, and that's it. When you have to get to underneath the hoof, then you have to hold it up like the old way, but cut your time in half, leaning over. It's handy. I don't know why anybody else.
I don't know why.
And the horses don't seem to mind. I don't figure that out either. I would think horses would not like putting their foot up there like that, stuck out. And holding in the air.
Now the ones I've seen are about like that.
Yeah, right, about like that.
Yeah.
And he'll put their foot on there, and they'll stand there all day with their foot just sitting up there. I don't know why.
Back or front?
Back or front. I never. What was my first drawback I thought to it was that horse wasn't going to stand for it. You know, he'd hold it there for a second, then he'd go on off. Even some of our horses that were the ones that gave the most trouble, they didn't mind. They just held the foot right up there. I don't know what it is.
Well, there's something psychological about that picking a horse's foot up. You see, you could pick Molly's foot up, and somebody else can come, and that left rift leg, she didn't want any messing with it.
Mm-hmm.
So you.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with the leg, you see.
Yeah, that's funny. But, man, what a character.
Now, he comes around where you are now?
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen him, though, two, 3 months. Can't figure out what's happened to him. I called him several times, come around, and because we needed him to do some work, but hadn't been able to get him. Either no answer or... Phone's always out of order because he never pays the bill and they have to come take it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I haven't been able to get through to him the last month or two. I don't know what's happened to him. He hadn't come around. Usually he comes around when he needs money. He figures there's always something you need doing. So he'll come around and you ask if you got anything, you know, for some quick money. But he hadn't come. I don't know whether he skipped town. He skipped town several times because bad checks or paying for something on time and not paying or something like that. He always has his trucks repossessed and his trailers and his horses, and so he skipped town I don't know how many times, but he comes back when it cools down. I don't know whether that's what's happening right this moment or not.
Well, you know, in this particular world where now he can't last forever.
Yeah.
So you better get him down right here.
While
he's able to move around.
He's something.
Do you know anybody who records people?
Not like we used to do.
Well, not like we used to. I don't see any of it.
Well, I know some. They do some recording there at the radio station to tape interview. I mean, you know, you're coming.
Well, I know that, but what does that amount to?
Nothing but a interview that's very it's not like, you know, you got all these microphones hanging down in your face and a beautiful quality. You ought to see some of the voices come through so clear. They've got up there in that, you remember Denise, the girl I had down here before. She works there. That's how I've gotten in with the radio station up there. The UT's FM station at UT there in Knoxville. Well, they They have a real nice studio. And they bring people in there, you know, the conductor of the symphony and things like that, to do an interview. And the quality that they get out of those, I mean, it's not worth listening to for what they say, but the tones are really nice. I don't know how they do it. They have a special room. This stuff all the way around, all sides of this stuff, and have these microphones placed around in certain positions, and they have just beautiful sounds they get. Just gorgeous. But they never tape anybody worth listening to. That I think. I mean, you know, if you want to hear what's going to be on the symphony next week, you know, you might want to listen. They never do any.
Well, you don't. I don't see anybody recording or even interested in recording.
I think it's too much trouble. They don't want to mess with it. You know, all the wires and things, they just don't want to mess with it. I don't know. I don't know what the reason is.
Well, this is no trouble. It runs right. Itself now. I do more now than I used to, and I don't go out of my way.
Really? If you got one of those deals that turns on, you know, you can get them sound activated.
I know it. That's what I'd love
so
to
So that
have.
When the minute a voice picks up, then it starts the machine, and then it cuts off when it's in between.
Yeah.
You do your own editing. You edit out all the space.
But that's all kind of small machines, isn't it?
No, you can get them on big.
Can you?
Mm-hmm. There's a new machine out now called a Nagra. Nagra. Tape machine. And it's really something. Completely portable. You can get a portable one. Carry around with batteries. And it gives sound like...
With a real or cassette?
Real. It's only about... You know, it's like a small reel. It's a small reel-to-reel set. About like a small suitcase. Not very heavy. But it costs $10,000. And they're strictly professional, just really top flight.
I've got one in here I've never used. It's a cassette, and it's extra good quality.
Mm-hmm.
And I just keep it there in case, you know, I want to go out. But it's just on 110.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you couldn't do it in the car? Mm-hmm.
And what I think about this call down there. Mr. Stafford, Guy Miles. David had that little reel tape recorder that wasn't that needed to be overhauled. No. The kind I wanted, but he didn't have one.
Where's Barbara?
And he said he could take send it off and have him remake it.
Document.
And
where?
I said, well,
it's the black paper
document. Where is that?
Yeah.
Well, make it up.
Is that right?
Really?
Well, I don't know why I didn't think of it then. I just tell him go ahead and send it off if he wanted to.
Should be over.
Yeah. Right off.
Yes, it is. Gosh, I never know what Barbara's going to do. She said she's over there working on some prints at Wade's.
What kind of equipment does she have?
I don't know.
She didn't have any now. She broke her camera.
She broke it?
I don't know how it ended. Of course, she hadn't been doing it.
You know, I got old Clyde to make me a camera case one time. Made the most beautiful camera case I've ever seen. Made for one of my Leicas. I didn't have a case for it. It cost $50 for a new one, leather one. And I just gave him the dimensions. He made one. It cost me $15. And it's handmade, stitched, and everything's beautiful from Clyde. And I don't go anywhere without a case on my camera. You can just bump them right into a table or something, and that's it.
Oh, that's what
they're
Nick
fragile.
Said. He said it's just you just break a camera quicker than anything.
Man, they're fragile. Every Friday.
And you just carry yours in a case all the time?
Oh, I never leave it out of a case. I just got a new one the other day that I don't have a case yet for.
You hang it around your neck?
Yeah, I keep it around my neck. It has no case. I thought about getting probably the next one for that one, but I found a used case that somebody's got that I'm going to get when I get back to school from them for it. But, glad, really. Did a nice job on it.
I imagine you're a little short of rations down there with the eggplant gone.
Yeah, I've never seen so many eggplants all my life.
Yeah.
He said
yeah,
they got more out of that
field,
10 acres. Then Fred got out of his 10 acres.
Clyde Guy Miles.
double.
Now, let me tell you, I don't want you to do a thing. I just want to ask you.
One somewhere else.
Can you make a briefcase without too much trouble?
I just bought a bridle from him. Yeah. Just
yeah.
Nice little bridle. Broke my other one.
Oh, you did?
The horse broke it.
Yeah. And just doing one of the kind, it sort of makes it slow.
I've had more trouble with these youngsters breaking bridles.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally just made a rule.
Yeah.
You break it, you take it. Rule we had to make it the club.
But let me tell you, don't think you can buy now those hard things.
We made a rule at the club, they were breaking stone bridles and reins. First rule, never tie them with the reins.
I want one that was set up.
If you break it, you pay for it.
Yeah.
And the rule we made them, that they had to do was, if they want to tie a horse up, they get a halter with a lead rope. And then if they break it, then the lead rope is a piece of rope.
And it could be several inches on the bottom. More like a sample case.
English.
And I can't find one. No.
To fix
it. That's all.
The Clyde.
Yeah. I've been trying to get on there.
I brought him two or three that I just got off from the day broken up there to have him fixed. Rain and head style. Things. That's what we finally had to do.
Yeah.
You break it, you pay for it.
That's all.
You thought you were going to leave to go to Knoxville? Really?
Yeah.
I thought Don said he thought he expected you around Christmas.
All right. I'll see you.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Right,
I don't know.
What did he say?
He had made him, but he didn't much relish the idea.
As I remember, I had to kind of prod him into getting him to do mine.
Yeah.
But
camera case.
Mm-hmm. First I brought it off and he took the measurements for the camera and I said, how long are you gonna be? And he said, well, I don't know. I never made one quite like this one before. Give me, you know, a couple of weeks. And so I waited a month, no word from him, so I called him and he said, oh, yeah, he said, I lost the measurements. Give me the measurements again. So I gave him the measurements again, waited another month, still nothing. Called him again. He says, well, I'm about to get to it now. He didn't want to do it. I don't know.
No.
I don't know whether he didn't want to do it or just all that really happened. But when he finally made it, it was, I got it out there. I'll show it to you.
If I had any flour, I could sure make some pancakes, but I don't.
But,
well, I don't know why I do all this eating around.
I've gotten into quite a few horse shows here lately. This starting with the spring, summer, and this fall. Been doing a lot of showing myself. Yeah, I could tell you some stories about that.
Is that right?
All around Knoxville, they're quite a horse show town there. Never seen so many horse shows. And all the neighboring little towns and things.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, they held a Eastern Regional Eastern Regional some association regional show was in Knoxville. Let's see, was it the Appaloosa Horses or the Quarter Horse? One of the horse associations held a regional. Show there, and the winner got to go to the World Cup, whatever that is. I never heard of the World Cup before, but they apparently have a system of regions east of the Mississippi, excluding Florida, is one region. Florida and Texas compose another region, and there's six in the United States. And then there's all the countries in the world. And so you have about... And the winner of each gets to go to the World Cup, which is held in St. Louis. And it was held just last week. I don't know who won, but... have both English and Western. And to get into the regional, you have to win in the state. And so... we had, at the Knoxville one, which was the regional one for the east of the Mississippi, had people from every state except Florida there, and they had as many as 200 in one class. Had so many in a class that they had to run them in heats, run 20 at a time, and break them down, take the winner of each and put them in another class and until they finally got a winner overall. It's really something. And,
I've got some out here, man.
They,
you got the wrong stuff. You don't do the brand.
Well, I know it.
So put it back where you got it.
But they had jumping. They had all the. They had a whole lot more English things than they did Western. In fact, they only had four Western classes, and I showed in one. I showed in Western Equitation and won.
And won?
Got a, won the Eastern Regional and got a chance to go to the World Cup, but then I don't know why, so they gave it to whoever was in second. And I can afford a week off to go to it in St. Louis. Plus I didn't have a horse. I was riding somebody else's horse. And it, of course, equitation is not the horse anyway, it's the rider. But,
I just told you. You can have plain bread. Is there any plain bread for you?
I don't know.
I don't know that I'm so hungry, really. I just ate down the road a while ago.
Maybe you got to chew on something.
Well, I'll chew on a little piece of toast then.
Well.
Yeah, peanut butter is up there. They're not anything.
Yep.
Cheese and peanut butter mix.
I got a real supreme compliment. The judge of the show there was from Memphis and is the coach of the Junior Olympic team. Kids?
Yeah.
And she was the judge at the show. And I earned the Western Equitation, which, you know, judges the... what the judge looks for is how the rider controls the horse. So it doesn't necessarily mean anything. If you have a bad horse, it doesn't necessarily mean you're out. If the horse does wrong, it's really what the rider does to show his horsemanship on the horse. So anyway, I had a horse that was pretty much of a pain. Didn't want to do anything right. Took long leads, all this stuff. But I ended up winning the class, the Western Equitation class. And after the class, when we went in to get into the center to get ribbon, the judge was there telling people what they did wrong. You know, the name's Vala Walker. You ever heard of Vala Walker?
No.
Yeah, coach there. Anyway. She said I had the hands. My hands were the gift of God.
Oh my goodness.
there isn't anything like those hands. I don't know what she's talking about, but...
Well, if you'd have been on my way, it would have been something.
Well, hey, that could have been a pleasure. Thank you, Tom. I thought they judged the horse instead of the rider. Yeah, I wish I could have entered some pleasure classes. The same horse I was on, the person who owned him entered him in pleasure class and didn't even place bottom and told you what a bad horse he was.
Uh-huh.
But I think I snowed the judge when I... What happened was that pleasure classes were first. And this particular horse I owned was real kind of wild and unmannered and really just green broke, sort of. Didn't know his proper leads and stubborn about him. Would always take one no matter which way you were going.
Uh-huh.
Wouldn't back up and things. And really nice looking horse. Nice confirmation and everything. But this girl that owned her took him in pleasure and the horse just did everything wrong. Of course, it didn't win anything. First one eliminated. But she had all this fancy gizmos all over the horse. I had tie downs and martingales and breast collars and chains and things, all trying to keep control of them, see?
Mm-hmm.
Long shanked bit and fancy reins and all this stuff for more control, try to keep control of them. All of that didn't help too much. But anyway, so what I did was, our class was next, and I took all that salad off, all that stuff, put just a basic bridle on with nothing, no tie downs, martingales, breast collars, anything, no chain, no curb chain, regular reins. And my regular little training bit, the one I always have used. That was all I used. And I went in there with that. And the judge told me later, she said, when I saw you coming on that horse that had just left, you know, and I knew that we were even going to either have a rodeo or she didn't know what. But when I controlled him halfway decent, she said she knew she had a winner.
You don't play the winner.
Oh, yeah, I always play to win. I like that silver. You ought to see my trophies. I got all kinds of trophies now. How long are you going to be up there?
Oh.
Going to be through the first? Going to be through New Year's? Because I'm coming back New Year's.
I'm going to be through the 31st. Yeah, I'll be there till New Year's Day.
I'm going back on New Year's Day. Are you leaving?
I don't know. I know I'm going to be there on the 31st.
Mm-hmm.
At least.
Well, if you got time, and I'll stay for a couple more days after that until I get back, and I'll show you around. You know, take you over there. Maybe we can meet Tex.
Yes. If you got a machine, I'll put him down.
Well, I got machines.
You got machines.
Yeah. Like I got a little rig up like this in my house, but I've never
used it.
I've not rigged it up specifically for that.
Well, it's
but we could get him right there into my front living room and do it.
Oh,
if
really?
I can get a hold of him. I have not had much luck recently. What a character. He beats any you've ever seen.
He beats anybody you ever saw, Nick said.
I'm just telling you that. One thing I've noticed about people like that, they just show up.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You got no way of.
You never know.
Get ready for them.
Yeah. And.
What did Teddy used to do?
You can call him. You can call him. If you get him on the phone, you say, "Well, I need you here in 30 minutes or tomorrow or something," and he may or may not.
Yeah.
He might be 2 weeks before he finally makes it. Although he'll guarantee you up and down, he'll guarantee you he'll be there in 30 minutes. Just no way out of it. I'll be there if I have to walk, he said. And 3 hours later, he finally comes, you know. One time I call up and we really had a problem. We had a horse with a shoe was half torn off and was the nails were digging into his leg and I needed him really fast. I got him on the phone miraculously. I told him and he says, "Oh, sounds bad. I'll be there right away. Just I'm coming over. In fact, I got my truck's rigged up to a horse trailer and there's a horse in it and I'll just bring it all. I won't even bother to unhitch. I'll just come right everything." And so 3 or 4 hours later on in the afternoon, he finally shows up, no trailer, comes in a car. And I said, "Well, what happened?" He said, "Well, my trailer got a flat tire on the way over, and I had to unload the horse, and the horse ran off when I unloaded it, and I had to chase him down the interstate, and this and that. You wouldn't believe the tale." Oh, he's something. He's really something.
Well, I've never been tied up with connected with anyone with alcohol. I steer clear of that. But if you've got disposition, that's a different matter.
Well, this guy would be such a prime guinea pig for this operation you had here before, because he's such a talker. I mean, you don't even have to
yeah.
bait him or nothing.
Yeah.
You just
yeah.
pop him down and you just have to close your ears because he just talks your ear off. You don't even have to ask him any questions. Or nothing. He just goes and goes and goes. And the story, you can sit there for 3 hours and not get a bit tired. It never lags. It never, you don't even have to say anything but or nothing. It's amazing. Just rambles on and on and on. Stories. And the funniest thing, and I laugh. I can't keep from laughing at him because the stories are so funny.
Yeah.
And they're all true stories. I mean, it's what happens to him and yeah, his experience. And he makes them sound so funny, just hilarious. I just my stomach hurts every time he comes so bad because of laughing at him. But and the best stories he tells are ones about other farriers.
Oh.
Oh, you want to hear him bad mouth other farriers? See, he's the only farrier in the world that's any good, and all the rest are just bumbling idiots. And you ought to hear him, and he'll. We got 3 or 4 there in Knoxville, you know, and he knows all of them, who they are. He doesn't know any of the names. One, to him, is one of them is that boy from Kentucky, and the other one is that young fella just out of school, and the other one is the one in still in diapers, and he is. All the young ones, they're too young. Says they couldn't put a shoe on. He said they got all those certificates of farrier school. He wouldn't give you a nickel for any of those certificates. From school. He said, "They don't mean nothing. All that fancy equipment they got and all these electric forges and all this stuff, he wouldn't give you a nickel for them." And then he started telling me all these stories about how, "Yeah, I saw that boy from Kentucky the other day shoeing a horse, and I pulled up and told him, 'Well, you done quicked him on 3 nails over this side, and it's crooked on that side,' and then he just on and on about other farriers. It's the funniest thing. Really hilarious. He's just one.
And of course, what we found is that if he was to run into one of those fellows and you were there, why, he'd just handle him with kid gloves.
That's right.
So just what, I don't know what that little adjustment is. I don't know.
And he has such great emotions too. He everything's with his hands, and he just tells you about it with his hands.
Yeah.
Everything, especially when he's out there with the horse in the middle of it. He walks around the horse and he motions like this, and he tells you just how your horse is going to walk with his hands, you know. And you end up somehow understanding it from all his gyrations.
You couldn't take a picture of that.
Emotions. Yeah, sure.
How close would you have to get?
You'd be anywhere. depending on what you use.
Huh?
Really, to get them to get it to where you could see it real well, you have to take a movie of it, probably.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, you could do that.
How close would you have to be?
Oh, you could be 100 yards off with proper equipment.
Sure.
Couldn't have to be right next to them.
Is that the equipment easy that you got a hold of?
Harry's got a nice, one of the best movie cameras made.
Who?
Larry, the fellow I had down here before, took this picture. Remember the fellow that had the goatee? Was here last time I was here, back
yeah.
September,
yeah.
October, August.
Yeah, and you all were coming back and did
mm-hmm.
it.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's got one of those movie cameras with a zoom lens on it.
Now, Nick Mallory, the one you ought to team up with, take a trip with. That just comes to me.
Yes, but they can't get off.
For what?
Can they get off a couple of days?
Could you and Larry get off a couple of days when you, after the first of the year and go with Kyle on a little trip?
Maybe, yeah.
Well, let me tell you what I did.
I mean, that's you got it set up.
Cookie has been sticking with me pretty well. And I've been working on his daddy and his family up in West Virginia. I made two trips up there. One I didn't take anything to record with. I just went up there with him. And I couldn't stand it. I went back up there. I stayed 2 weeks and recorded all the time.
Really?
Yes.
Did some good stuff?
Beautiful.
How was the quality from the machine? Was it, did that turn out?
Mediocre.
But
good enough not to
mm-hmm.
bother you. It wouldn't bother you. All I had was those, the model past this.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't take any of the better equipment up
mm-hmm.
there. I couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't work in the house. I finally had to, we went out and ran down a little travel trailer. A little bit of a 12-foot thing. It was, just beautiful. So anything happened, we'd go out there and talk it over. They talk all right, except if you talk with the family, somebody in the family is going to start monitoring. They won't do it. They don't care. But either the wife or the daughter or the son or somebody, you see, is going to start that monitoring business. So you have to get out. And it don't take much to upset the whole equilibrium,
yeah.
balance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's just beautiful.
Hmm.
Some of the finest folk I ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, he brought in a community. We went up and made hay. That's a little corner. We went up and mowed it. And he says, and when we left, he got the fork and went around and got some little, you couldn't reach with the mower, with the baler. And he says, this is what my brother called being stingy.
Mm-hmm. So what do you want to do, go over there again?
I never tell you. He told me that right in this spot there where his brother got something on him. In that same spot, 30 or 40 years ago. And he said, I got to talking about his brother after that, you see. He said, yes. He laughed. And if he got anything on you, he wouldn't let it go. Well, now this is long. But Burl was a pretty enterprising fellow. And he had a little blacksmith shop of a thing out in his shed, barn. And in the winter, he packed up all of his equipment. So in planting time, he'd be ready to go. Well, they was up there at that same corner. Trees up there then, and he had a sled, hauling the hay out on the sled, and his brother had the sled and had his horse hitched to it, and he had a horse that if if he hit a little hump there in the road, that horse is part pulling, you see, and go right through it, wouldn't let it stop him. Well, he went through this little batch of trees, and he got one runner of the sled hooked in a tree, and he done it the same way. So he went off for the sled and load of hay and left that runner back there. And when his brother saw that, he said he got the ticket, he couldn't stand up. He just had to go totally frog around there, and Burl showed him how he did. And I see your generations in that same spot, and he brings in people. Cookie don't do that because he don't know anybody, and I don't know anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't anybody know anybody much that I know, you see.
Yeah.
You're trying to know somebody, but they either die off or move off or...
Mm-hmm.
That's on Everreal. Things just as rich as that. And he lives up at the end of the valley. He got no horns, no headlights, no traffic.
That'd be nice.
And it is one of the most beautiful little valleys I ever saw. It's less than an acre wide. And he had it planted in that heavy red top clover and purple top clover and orchard grass. And he'd already cut it twice. Cuts it and we got it in the sun, you see, it cures and it smells. A horse would get along better on the smell of that than it would eat the stuff we put up.
Where is that in West Virginia? Where is that near?
Oh, not far from Charleston.
From Charleston?
Not hard to get to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's one place, but there are other places. I'd go just work solid for 2 or 3 days, and then come on home and work up from there.
Well, is Larry in Nashville this Christmas?
He's right now in Japan.
Oh, he is.
He's getting back though. What's the day? The 17th. Uh-huh. He'll be back the 20th.
Well, do you have his address?
Mm-hmm. In Knoxville.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I really like him.
Yeah.
We'll get his.
I don't need to get his address.
You can always get him by just calling the radio station on the Knoxville campus. In fact, I know him too. I had him over there.
The radio station.
Mm-hmm. He works with
Larry. What's his name?
Taylor.
Larry Taylor.
He works at the radio station, the FM station on campus, the university one. And you can always get him there during what day. But he may be here. He said he may fly back to Japan from Japan to here and see me on the way back. Not sure.
But you'll be back the first.
I'll be back the first. Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty short time. They don't allow you much time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, you're starting early.
Yeah, I got off earlier this time than I ever had.
Well, you can take off a day or two here and there, can't you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nick's free enough. He can freelance.
In the week, the weekend sometimes get hairy, but in the middle of the week,
that guy would like it in the middle of the week better.
In the middle of the week.
I don't like to work on weekends. It's
neither.
Unnatural. You want business.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, what he needs is a photographer that's going to go along with him, and somebody that sort of has a feel for it. I thought Larry.
You ever see Russell Hillis's work?
Mm-mm.
Well, that's funny thing. What's wrong with that? Why
didn't he
next door
that?
Russell Hillis, who's that?
He's a cousin of ours. He does these travel things.
Movies, man?
Yeah. Oh, no. I don't like that Russell.
He did that radio show.
He did the radio
television.
Where?
The big one there.
You know
really
Flossie
is.
And Russell, they come out to LS
all. What station?
You
know
what
station?
What they say,
sir?
What's one of the stations in Nashville?
TV?
Yeah.
Or radio?
TV.
Well, it's WTVK, WTVK.
Well, anyway, it's one of
those.
I don't remember which one it is.
Larry probably knows. I'm sure.
He's the, I don't know what he is. He's one of the big wigs, and he does, he takes 5 or 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 trips abroad with people all the time for the station and on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Then he takes pictures, and then he puts them all together and has a little run and talk about it and sells the tape. He does it with tape and pictures. I don't know because he did movies. I think he mostly does it as live.
Well, that's what Larry's doing now in Japan.
Oh, is he?
For the station, the radio station.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And that's where I got some of my camera equipment.
Yeah.
In Japan, you know, you're going to get it first.
Yeah. Larry Taylor. Mm-hmm.
And he's, in fact, as a matter of fact, when he left here that day, knowing where we left, he expressed some interest. He said, you know, I'd like to do that. He said,
You see, guys don't have the money to pay you for doing it.
Well,
I mean, this is what he needs, and
Larry
said he'd like to do it.
Larry said he was interested.
I mean,
I said, come on, Larry, now you don't have to say that just because
I
mean,
I remember
said,
you.
He said, no.
No,
no, really. He said that.
Yeah, he was interested.
I can see why that would be.
Yeah,
he
said,
never.
Today.
He might could do it.
Uh-huh.
He might very well could do it.
See, that's the tape.
Or you use those Sony ones, they're
nice. That's the neat. That's the notes.
Mm-hmm.
Not all that. Some of it is stuff I've written up on.
Mm-hmm.
I made that many notes.
No.
Nick would get so excited, and you know, there, you know, if you've got 4 or 5 cameras.
Yeah, I kept a typewriter. Yeah, and the typewriter clears my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I can listen just so much, but I can type all day. I mean, I can see what I've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
It arrests me.
You better pack that, whatever you think. So, well, that encourages me because I was, you know, you're going to get back that early.
Well, he's a cinematographer, really, more than a snap picture.
Well, you've got the equipment.
Well, he does too, but he's more interested, really, in cinematography. Cinematography is really expensive.
I think I'd be more interested in just plain pictures.
When you start taking movies, that really runs into money. I mean, just to buy a roll of film is like $20 for just a roll of film. And then you get processing is another $20, I think. And then you've only got 3 minutes worth of show time. You know, oh boy, it's really expensive. Black and white's not. Now, black and white's cheap, but color is awful expensive. He was telling me he had his movie camera with him down here when we were here before.
Hell, I would be able to. I don't need color.
He was telling me he can put it on. He can put the sound on the film too with his camera.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now you see. Now you're talking.
He can put the sound. What he's taking a picture of with the microphone, he can put it on the film.
Now that would be something.
Well,
he's got an ingenue camera made in France, one of the finest. That's $12,000 just for the camera. It's what TV stations use.
Yeah.
And it's got a really fancy lens on it.
And so that's what he's doing in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Taking movies and doing
recordings mostly. He's recording people over there.
What
he's doing in Japan, in Taiwan, in Bangkok, and Hong Kong. That's all the places he's been. He's doing tape interviews for his radio station. People like the director of the local TV station in Tokyo, you know, and an interview with the ballerina at some, you know, things like that. Fine arts. It's just a field subject that he's supposed to get interviews for from people over there and do movies and snaps and everything. He's taken 4,000 pictures, photographs, just, you know, prints already.
Over there.
4,000 already he's taken. Yeah, I got a letter from him the other day.
Well, that's the way you got interested in this, then, through Larry.
2 years ago when I first met him.
But with all of Nick's equipment, yeah, you ought to get pictures any way you want.
Now we can put them any way, shape, or form you want. We can put sound on the print if you want. I saw an interesting slide presentation at UT where a fella had taken just reams of slides of Spain and Portugal, is what he called it. Impressions of Spain and Portugal is the name of the show. And he had taken like several thousand slides, and he put them in slide projectors and showed them on the screen, and had a microphone and had the pictures going with the sound. In other words, when a picture flashed on the screen from a slide of an old man sitting on the corner of the street or something, he took the picture of the guy, but he also had, you know, had a microphone there and
the
taped a little thing of the guy talking, yeah. And then that, he dubbed that onto, put that on the tape recorder and had that match up with all these slides. He had it all matched up. Every time he took a picture of somebody, he had a little voice soundtrack of birds, whatever was going on at the time. And it's just a whole flow, one right after the other, of these slides, one right after the other, of these people, mostly all people. No land, no pictures of mountains or anything like that. They're all people. And kids and people pulling their mules and things. And it had this running soundtrack. So it really wasn't a movie. It was just slides, just regular slides like anybody can take. But he had so many of them, he was able to take up a 30 minutes showing them one right after the other, but with this soundtrack, 30-minute tape, too, playing all along at the same time, matched up with the slides as they came off. Really interesting. Really interesting.
That was a lot cheaper than a 30-minute movie.
Yeah, oh boy, a 30-minute movie cost you $1,000. Larry recently did a movie for the Knoxville Housing Authority. A movie, short. His was only 10 minutes. 10-minute thing that they were going to use for advertising to show how good houses the housing authority had, you know, around town and all. How they tore down. You know, he had movies of tearing down certain sections and building houses and all this stuff. Anyway, it was in color. It was a 10-minute film, and it cost $2,500. So it's a really expensive movie, especially in color. In black and white. Pretty cheap, but color. At least $2,500 was not. $2,500 was very charged. He was making a profit, but I bet it cost him $1,000.
Just to make it,
yeah.
Well, Larry does pretty well then.
Oh, yeah, he's a big time professional. I mean, he's right up there. He's top flight. Moonlight. He works at that radio station, but he moonlights with photography. Photography is his real love.
Well, why is he moving radio station?
Because it's a better salary. It's more steady. It's a guaranteed income there like that. You know, he always has that check. And with photography, you might go a month for that before you have an assignment.
Well, golly, he doesn't have to go to Japan. He can go up to Burl Cook's and get something for the radio station.
How much do you make there?
I think he makes $10,000 to $12,000 a year.
Not to live on?
Yeah.
But he has to put it in pretty full time.
Yeah, well, with the radio station there, his job, he's the producer for the radio station. That means he produces sound shows. In other words, when they put on a program over the radio station there, that it's educational radio. It's like the educational TV. The educational TV is downstairs from them, and he's the educational radio. Anyway, they put on a show, you know, about consumerism or something, you know. He goes and tapes, makes a recording of the president of the Chamber of Commerce and all this stuff, you know, and put together a half-hour program that's going to be on the radio station. Well, this gives him pretty much leeway of, you know, you don't have to be there behind a desk all day long, 9 to 5, you know, he just comes and goes and carries the tape recorders around or brings them into the studio or whatever, he's got his assigned tapes for the week, and that's all he has to put in. But
I haven't heard anything on a radio that's worth listening to.
Yeah, when you get up there, you tune into that one. That's some station.
All they got here is music.
Not there. When you get up to Knoxville, you tune in to, it's 91 on FM. 91. Tune into that. It's WUOT. W University of Tennessee, UOT. And that's some station. They really never seen anything like it.
You don't get anything like that on WRUF.
Uh-uh.
I don't even know whether they still have FM or not.
See, this is an NPR station, National Public Radio. It's funded by the government, so it's not, there's no commercials. Absolutely no commercials in it.
Good Lord. You can't listen to David Brinkley without waiting.
And their news.
Cutting through 5 minutes or
the news. The news they put on runs from 5 to 6:30. Hour and a half, and there's no commercials, just runs for an hour and a half. And they've consistently, every year, got the award for the best news in the country over all the TV stations, over all the networks.
It's a radio station, 91. I've heard somebody down here, Doug Kinsey said, if you can get 91 on your radio, get it.
It's something.
FM.
Tune
91.
Into the news, tune in at 5 o'clock, it's 5 to 6:30 every day.
You'd have to have an antenna to get that far.
Oh, we couldn't get it from here. But when you're in Knoxville, listen to it. You can't get it outside of Tennessee.
Well, it's not that strong.
You can get it anywhere in Tennessee, just about. But and North Carolina some, too. But not much.
Well, we're not much farther from them than Memphis.
Yeah, but there's a mountain range in between.
It's between them and Memphis, too.
You gotta go by.
Well,
you can't.
I don't think they get it in Memphis. You get it in Nashville, but that's about as far. Chattanooga. But it's a humdinger of a station. It's on from 8 o'clock in the morning to 2 o'clock at night. They're not quite 24 hours. But any music that they ever have is all classical. Not once do you ever hear pop or this program music or anything like that. It's all classical. Whenever they have a music show, it's always classical. Solid. I don't see their record library. That's 15,000, 20,000.
I've seen the record library at WRUF.
Really?
And it's all pop.
Yeah. They don't even have any. There's one there at UT doesn't own one.
It all looks like it might be.
Yeah.
But it's
all pop, right. Well, they've got every one is classical record.
Well, that's what Doug Kinsey was talking about. He said,
I listen to it all the time.
He said, you can't believe it. He said, news, music. Discussion.
Always lots
anything.
Of program discussion things.
Uh-huh.
They get shows, they get programs from England that they put on about English, whatever, going on over there, things. And they're sprinkled throughout the day, sprinkled in with some classical in between. And it's really good. It's funded by the government, but there's no strings attached. Government gives them the money to operate the station. That's where they get their money. They have no advertising. And but they don't. The government doesn't say. Well, all right, you have to have certain programs or something. In fact, there are NPR stations that are really bad. Like I think WRUF is an NPR station. I think. I'm not sure. But their programmer, the guy who's in charge of whatever goes over the air, is a really top flight guy.
I believe there's one
of those.
In fact,
Denise, you know, the girl I have
yeah.
here, she's the assistant program.
I believe there's one of those in Jacksonville because it's
mm-hmm.
91.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the one that Doug was talking about. He said, you know, I don't ever look at television. I just,
mm-hmm.
I have that, I put on that
mm-hmm.
91
in
the radio.
You mean 91 in Jacksonville?
I think there's a 91 in Jacksonville. But we
mm-hmm.
can't get it here.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about it here.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing. Well, when you get an offer, tune into it. You'll. Don listens to it all the time on there. Every time I go over there, they got it on. In fact, Don didn't listen to the news on TV. He listens to the one on radio, the news.
Uh-huh.
Really in depth. When they go into an issue or something, they don't just tell you, read it off the Associated Press wire. When the thing about Nixon with his leg and all over in the hospital and all, they didn't just tell you that that Nixon was still in the hospital and refused to see him and blah blah blah. They didn't just do that. They got interviews with surgeons and psychiatrists and lawyers and all over the country who might have an insight into the problem or something, and everybody gave their opinions of what they don't just really. That's why it takes an hour and a half to get it all. And they always have. They don't. It's not just boring national, international news either. They take the first, divide it into 3 half-hour segments. First half-hour segment is national, international type things, the president and whatever he's doing, and national issues and things. The second half-hour is national, but local national. I mean, they'll go into Poughkeepsie, you know, and have talk to some farmer about soybeans or something, you know. And then they'll, in the last half hour, is just interesting little things on the news, like so-and-so had quintuplets, you know, and or something like that, you know, or so-and-so's mule died at the age of 65, you know, or something. Just real interesting little things. Like on Beethoven's birthday, which was yesterday, I listened to it when I was driving, they had a little thing about Beethoven, a little interesting story somebody just dug up about Beethoven's life, and played a little piece of music by Beethoven, played a bagatelle. It lasted for 30 seconds, and the guy was poking fun. He says, now this is what Beethoven called a brief piece. It's 30 seconds long is all it takes to play it. And he's just, you know, they're real good little station.
91. Yeah.
Well, looks like the sun might make it.
Okay, my, it's out here. I'll go get it.
That would be really fun.
Don told me he didn't think he didn't know at all.
He went over to the beach.
Did he really?
He spent the night with Don.
Really?
Had the best time. But,
well, that's good.
But
he looks much better. I remember.
He looks just
so healthy. And
he looks a lot better.
Well, and I remember back there when he was still teaching, he was pale. And
gosh, we were really worried about
But now it's an unbelievable change.
Yeah.
Must have added some psychological change.
Well, it's
more
right.
Peppy.
Right.
And, yeah, sure.
And I
haven't been up there in time recently. How do you get through Atlanta?
Okay. Well, there are several ways. Depends on what time of day you're going through it.
Yeah.
That's the best. Depending on the best way. Where are we here? They're off of the times, I guess. Okay. If you're coming up the interstate, how are you going to be coming up?
The interstate.
You're going to be coming on the interstate? Okay. Make sure when you hit this Macon, Georgia, the interstate you'll be on is I-75. But you'll come to a big fork in the road with these huge signs over there, and it says Interstate 75 this way and 475 this way to the left. And the one that says I-75 to the right says to Macon, Georgia, I-75. And this one says 475 north. That's all. Well, Atlanta and so forth. Don't get on that 75 through Macon. You go right downtown and all this, and it's way out of the way. It's very misconceiving the way they got the sign. You need to get on 475, which is a beltway. It goes around it and cuts off, I don't know how many miles and time, and you can see it here. See here, 475?
Sure.
Cuts off, and you cut off instead of going that way and then that way and going through all of downtown and getting all messed up and traffic. You just cut straight. Now here, it's just the opposite. Depending on the time of day, here's an inset. You'll be coming up this way. All right, when you get to this point, you'll have the same big, huge signs that will say North Atlanta 75 or the Beltway, which is 285. You see, it goes all the way around. Okay, It's 25 miles longer to take the beltway. Uh-huh. So you're going to come out up here. Now, that's advantageous if you're there at a bad time. It's not if you're not. In other words, if you're there any other time but 5 o'clock, then just go straight on through Atlanta, because it's not, it looks bad going through downtown, but it's all, the whole thing's above the city. You just keep right on going.
Yeah.
It doesn't even stop you.
You don't except even know
in five, except in 5 o'clock traffic. It's 4 lanes
mm-hmm.
on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have 4 lanes to go in, but in 5 o'clock traffic, all 4 of those just jam up bumper to bumper, and it's murder. So it's worth it to take the 25 miles out of the way to get on the beltway.
Mm-hmm. And that's where it says beltway?
It says beltway, right. You'll have a big sign on the interstate that'll say 285 beltway north.
Uh-huh.
You'll have an east and a west, or a east and a west, and you'll want to go to the west.
Mm-hmm.
The east one goes way out here. It's about 50 miles out of the
way. And then get back on 75?
And then you get back on it right here.
Mm-hmm.
Is that 75?
Mm-hmm.
Just go around. But if it,
does 75 go to Knoxville?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
in fact, see, it goes right on up here. Through, now, you'll get off 75 when you get to Marietta, because they haven't completed it. They haven't gone over the dam.
Back
yet.
On 41.
So you get on 41 for about 20 miles. And then you get back on 75 right there at Cartersville. And then from there on, you're clear.
You don't go through Chattanooga.
You go through Chattanooga and just keep right on 75 and right on up to Knoxville.
Is it better to go through Chattanooga than to go up there?
It is now that they finished.
It is.
Now that they finished, it's solid. If you're going for time, depends. If you want relief from driving, like on the interstate, you just straight, no traffic, street lights and things like that. If that's what you want, it's quicker, time-wise, to go through Chattanooga. Now, if you want to go through all the little towns and take your time, and if you got plenty of time, then you can go 41. It takes longer.
Go 41. That's the way we like to go.
441.
441.
411. That's it. 411. 411 from Cartersville. In which case, when you get off there for that little 20-mile stretch at Marietta, the road that you use to get back on 75 is 411. So when you get on that one, if you don't want to get on the interstate, then you just go right on under and keep on going. That's 411.
That's true.
Which goes through Etowah and Chattsworth.
But you don't ever go through those places.
I don't ever go there because all those little towns with traffic lights and farmers with their 1-mile-an-hour tractors on the road and things, it takes you about, if you drive exactly the speed limit, it takes about a half hour to an hour quicker by going the interstate, even though it's about 20 miles longer or something.
Hey, you know, that's nice, thank you. since you had anything much to do with it down here, it's all changed.
What, here?
Yeah, what we listen for. It doesn't bear much resemblance to what's used here.
You mean, the talking people around me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how come?
I just think, and I don't know why. You see, if you listen to some of that, you can tell. It's easier to make something out of it than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got this little tape. Cookie at Buck Mountain, and it's about 20 minutes, and it's just you can listen to it quicker, and I'll have a copy up there, so you'll have a copy, you can listen to it up there. Okay.
I've got a machine now, finally, reel-to-reel one. In fact, I've got a reel-to-reel one and a cassette together. The whole thing.
One of them won't have you much. You ought to have a couple.
Well, I've got the I don't have two reel-to-reel ones. I have two separate tape machines. One's cassette and one's a reel-to-reel. I can go back and forth from them.
You can't copy.
Well, you can copy it onto a cassette. But there's a section here on 75 between Chattanooga and Knoxville.
Yeah.
That is about to be completed. I don't know if it is or not. When I came down yesterday, it was not complete. But they tell us the paper's going to open any day. In fact, people were driving around the barrels and going on it anyway. A little 20-mile stretch in here between Sweetwater and Athens.
And you came on down it anyway?
No, I went off and got on 11 and came down
yeah.
and got back on it. A little stretch in there.
I see.
But it may be that they opened it.